It is Thursday, July 11th, 7-11. And from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on Ozarks, gay and lesbian-owned businesses in Eureka Springs are forming their own guild. Jacqueline Froelich has that report. Plus, women who were and are Arkansas pioneers are the subject of a new exhibit opening at the Fort Smith Museum of History this weekend.
And we were there last night as the entire cast and crew for a new play met for the first time, just days before the staged reading of the work. Kyle has the final installment in our start-to-finish series highlighting a new play in progress.
But first, original manufacturing defects are being blamed for the rupture of an oil pipeline in March, which spilled an estimated 150,000 gallons of tar sands in Mayflower. ExxonMobil says a report by an independent lab that inspected the damaged section of the 65-year-old pipe concluded hook cracks near a seam contributed to the failure. Glenn Hooks is a spokesman for the Sierra Club, which has been critical of the oil giant and its practices.
It certainly is not a surprise that a 1940s-era pipeline built by a company that's no longer in existence would rupture, especially when you're talking about a pipeline that is now carrying materials it wasn't designed to carry at high pressure and high heat and much thicker viscous materials and in a different direction than it was originally designed to do. It'd be surprising if such a pipeline didn't break.
22 homes were evacuated near the site of the spill, while others nearby who were not evacuated have expressed concerns about the long-term health effects of exposure to the fumes. In a written statement, ExxonMobil says it has conducted supplemental testing to ensure a similar incident does not happen again.
Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas says Congress should reach a bipartisan solution to lowering student loan interest rates by tying them to U.S. Treasury rates, which are now at historic lows. After interest rates for subsidized Stafford student loans doubled last week, Congress so far has not been able to reach an agreement to keep rates low for students applying for aid for the upcoming fall semester. Senator Bozeman says tying rates to financial markets would be a better long-term solution than a temporary extension of the loan rate subsidy.
The bill that I support right now that has wide bipartisan support would use the very low 10-year Treasury notes and then add 1.85%, which is really the cost of servicing the loans, defaults, things like that, add those two together, and that would be about 3.66%, which again would be locked in from now on.
Critics of that bill worry that under the plan, students who apply for loans in the future may have to pay more if the interest rates on the Treasury notes begin to increase.
The Arkansas Historic Preservation Program yesterday announced more than $2 million in preservation grants to projects in 41 counties. Just more than $74,000 of that total were given to 13 Main Street programs through downtown revitalization grants. Main Street Siloam Springs was one program receiving a $5,700 grant. Meredith Bergstrom is the director of Main Street Siloam Springs, and she says the money will go toward a matching micro-grant program helping business owners in downtown Siloam Springs rehabilitate the facades of their buildings.
Typically, these projects aren't the whole building restoration projects. These are more, you know, I want to move into this building and help show off that my business is here, or I've really been meaning to do something about this, but I haven't in a while. So it depends. We've had some projects that are as small as adding exterior signage for about $500, and so we'll match $250 of that. We've had other projects where it was a complete overhaul of the front of the building. They were tuck pointing the brick. They were repainting it. They were adding signage and awnings. And that was more of a $6,000 project.
Bergstrom says through the microloan program, business owners can apply for up to $1,000 of matching funds from Main Street Siloam Springs for rehabilitation projects. In its first year as a Main Street Arkansas affiliate, the Eureka Springs Downtown Network also received one of the grants. Jacqueline Wolven is the director of the organization, and she says the grant will help the city bolster tourism, the major industry of the city. Main Street Rogers was also one of the 13 Main Street programs receiving a downtown revitalization grant. Kerry Jensen is director of Main Street Rogers, and while he says the organization has no firm plans for how to use the money, the annual grant program can have a dramatic impact on the downtown area.
We actually don't have any other industry in Eureka, and so everything that we do has an eye towards historic preservation travel. We're always looking for ways to upgrade, maintain, and keep active in the downtown to remain attractive both as a community to live in, but definitely for the tourists to enjoy. our programming, a lot of it has to do with making sure that tourists are having amazing moments and making memories every day.
In addition to the grants for Main Street Arkansas programs, 18 counties were awarded county courthouse restoration subgrants, including a grant for more than $124,000 to Boone County, $65,000 went to Madison County, and just less than $12,000 was awarded to Crawford County, with the grants being purposed for rehabilitation of each county's historic courthouse. Also, several cities received grants for training local historic district commissions and for assistance in rehabilitating buildings owned by local governments and listed on the National Register of Historic Places.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville is making additions to its development, managerial, and curatorial departments. According to the museum, Dina Wood of Springdale, who worked in President Clinton's administration in the Department of Veterans Affairs and most recently at the University of Arkansas, takes the post of the museum's development director. Suzanne Navarra, who has worked in the insurance industry, most recently for Stevens Insurance Company in Fayetteville, is the museum's new guest services manager. Barbara Tillman, the former director of sales at the Holiday Inn at Pinnacle Hills, is the museum's new outside sales manager. And Chad Allegood, a native of Perry, Georgia, is the new assistant curator for special projects. He was a curatorial intern for collections at the Guggenheim Museum and most recently served as a Gene and Ralph Graham Collections Fellow at the Cranbrook Art Museum.
After six games on the road in Texas, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals returned to Arvest Ballpark last night to open a four-game set against Springfield. The Naturals defeated the Cardinals 10-5. Play continues tonight in Springdale.
National Weather Service has again issued an excessive heat advisory through 7 tonight for the Arkansas River Valley. Expected heat index values around 105. Tonight, mostly clear. Lows will be in the upper 60s in northwest Arkansas, mid-70s for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow, highs from 93 to 96. And for Friday night, mostly clear. Lows in the mid-60s in northwest Arkansas, lows around 70 for the Arkansas River Valley. As many as 60 gay and lesbian-owned businesses operate in Eureka Springs. And to better promote their industry, they're organizing a guild. It's the first of its kind in Arkansas, and Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
Fusion Squared's among a handful of especially nice fine art and craft galleries located on Upper Spring Street in Eureka. John Jarrett is co-owner of the business, along with his partner, glass artist John Reinhardt. He says many of their patrons are gay.
I think when you come here, you feel like you're home.
Of Eureka's 2,000 residents, as many as 400 are gay, many operating tourist accommodations, gift shops, and restaurants. Seasonal diversity festivals attract thousands more gay tourists to town every year. To better capitalize on this lucrative demographic, John Jarrett has been leading the effort to form a gay business guild.
I feel it's very important that the gay business owners in town band together and take charge of their own destiny.
The group is applying for a 501c6 nonprofit status for business leagues, chambers of commerce, real estate boards, and boards of trade, and are crafting bylaws.
Probably by the end of this month, we'll have the bylaws set down. And at that point, we will be meeting with the community at large to present this to them.
Several meetings with gay business owners at large were hosted this winter and spring, allowing opportunity to come up with a mission statement.
To foster the economic well-being of the greater Eureka Springs LGBT and allied business and professional community by promoting Eureka Springs as a year-round LGBT inclusive tourist destination. In addition, we want to devise networking, advertising, marketing, and social opportunities for guild members, and we want to serve as an advocate for LGBT business issues and initiatives. Finally, we would like to expand business opportunities by connecting guild members to local, state, and national travel market entities, and to serve as a liaison to local, state, and national tourism agencies.
Dozens of gay business guilds and chambers operate across the country in places like Tampa, Florida, and Charlotte, North Carolina, where Teresa Davis, an attorney for the federal government, is president of the All-Volunteer Charlotte Business Guild, established in 1992.
Participation in any LGBT organization is vital to the LGBT community in that particular city.
Davis says her guild functions more as a social professional network, hosting monthly meetings with featured speakers. And is also a diversity member of the Charlotte Chamber of Commerce. They also do target advertising in both mainstream and gay press.
Through Facebook, through other social media, we advertised in the Charlotte LGBT newspaper, which is called Q Notes, and sometimes we advertise in the Charlotte Observer.
The Eureka Springs Gay Business Guild hopes to raise advertising dollars. For now, you can spot gay-owned shops by rainbow iconography, hanging in windows and from awnings. And longtime Guild advocate Michael Walsh says gay business greatly contributes to the local economy.
You know, even if you take three diversity weekends a year that draw thousands of people, even if they only spent $100 each for a weekend, that would be hundreds of thousands of dollars.
The former Universal Press syndicated columnist and Chicago Sun-Times editor lives just outside of Eureka, where he writes for Better Homes and Gardens publications. He's also author of Arkansas's first domestic partnership registry ordinance, which brings many gay couples to town.
Well, the Eureka Springs Domestic Partnership Registry, which was enacted in 2007, has drawn more than 700 couples from 15 different states outside of Arkansas. So that's how powerful something like that can be. And eventually, when same-sex marriage is legal in Arkansas, it will do the same thing.
Same-sex marriage is currently banned in Arkansas, but the state's Economic Development Commission chief, Grant Tenniel, recently went on record in support of repealing it, because it will promote economic growth and attract new business.
I mean, Eureka Springs has already been billing itself as the marriage capital of the South for years and years, and approximately 5,000 marriages are performed here every year. So, but that doesn't count gay and lesbian couples.
Walsh says the Gay Guild will promote Eureka Springs as a safe and welcoming place.
We are gay travelers. We know what gay travelers are looking for when they go to a place. And their number one priority is safety. They want to go someplace where they're comfortable. And in Eureka Springs, you can hold hands on the street, you can have a romantic dinner with your partner, and feel completely respected. And so we want to get that message out.
The Greater Eureka Springs Chamber of Commerce does list Diversity Weekends on its calendar of events, but guild members believe the chamber has failed to promote gay business interests. Chamber Director Mike Bishop could not be reached for comment. Now, Eureka Springs Advertising and Promotion Commission does advertise in regional gay publications, says Mike Maloney, Executive Director, and he supports the Guild's formation. On any given day during the season, the tourist population swells to as many as 16,000, he says, but no data has been gathered on the number of gay visitors.
What we do know, though, is that whenever a Diversity Weekend comes about, we see a lot of new faces in town. So, you know, we've got a pretty good idea that it is effective. It does promote commerce. We take a look at our web traffic, and we notice that starting on Thursday, we start to see this swell in visitor traffic to eurekasprings.org, our website. And, you know, we have a pretty good idea that the accommodations, which is what basically they're looking for, has got some direct reference to people in the gay and lesbian community that are looking for places to stay. So, and then there's some specific venues in town that really do cater, I think, very well to the gay and lesbian community.
Eureka Springs is the fourth largest income-producing city for tourism in the state, and business in Eureka is good.
Well, in overall tax revenues collected, we ended the year up almost 11% over the previous year, which was the biggest record year that we had had.
Lamont Ritchie has an excellent grasp on Eureka's zeitgeist, being a longtime guest cottage owner in Eureka Springs, as well as transit director. He now serves as Justice of the Peace on Carroll County Quorum Court. From his current perch at Quicksilver Gallery in downtown Eureka, which he owns with his partner Steve Roberson, Lamont Ritchie sees how the tourist culture is shifting.
My conversation with people involved with the chamber, there's a recognition of how the diversity of town really promotes what we are and why we're the draw and attraction that we are. And we have an idea in our minds as to how we want to promote it, and we're going to work hand in hand with everybody.
Gay business guilds, says Michael Walsh, have contributed to the revival of certain small communities.
In effect, it was the Key West Gay Business Guild that basically salvaged Key West as a resort destination after the U.S. Navy pulled out and abandoned the naval station down there, and the population dwindled to nothing and the town was a wreck. But gay and lesbian entrepreneurs came in, rebuilt the town, rebuilt its reputation, and provided entertainment venues for both gay tourists and straight tourists.
And that phenomenon has played out in Eureka.
There has been a gay community here for over half a century, no question about it. And they have been the entrepreneurs and the creative people and the artists who have rehabbed the houses and the businesses and brought them back to life.
According to the Williams Institute, the nation's top sexual orientation and gender identity law and public policy think tank, an estimated 9 million Americans identify as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, comprising 3.5% of the adult population. And David Paisley, Senior Research Director at Community Marketing Insights, researches their travel and spending habits. Paisley says, in the main, LGBT consumers tend to be a little more affluent.
So what we found through our research is that LGBTs do have a little bit higher income, but it has a lot to do with just that we have a tendency to live in more progressive cities and communities where everyone in those communities just tends to make a little bit more.
Paisley said progressive rural resort towns like Eureka Springs are gaining in popularity, and smaller communities tend to be more successful in courting gay tourism when they operate gay guilds or chambers.
So what typically happens is that they're so successful, the local tourism bureaus begin to notice. And then often, the local tourism bureaus start participating in this type of outreach.
Across the U.S., we have nearly 40 gay chambers of commerce, with six in the Southeast. The Chicago Area Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce is based on Clark Street, familiar to new Eureka migrants, Ken Riley and his partner Harold Ellis.
When Harold and I had our 25th anniversary, the Chicago City Council did pass a resolution honoring the things that Harold and I had done.
The city passed a resolution to honor Riley and Ellis as plaintiffs in the state's first felony hate crimes prosecution, and for being instrumental in reviving several depressed neighborhoods in the city. After visiting Eureka Springs several years ago, the couple decided to relocate here to operate a realty and lodging business. They are also ground floor members of the new Eureka Springs Gay Business Guild. Again, Ken Riley.
As a lodging owner here in town, we pay a CAPC tax, that's city advertising and promotion, and we don't really have a lot to say about where we want the money spent and stuff like that. So by being a member of this organization as well, we can advertise directly to who we want, whether it's the Advocate or the Tulsa Star or whatever. It's just to get people saying, hey, this is a place to be.
The couple now look forward to many pleasant years in Eureka Springs, having happily downsized, Ozarkian style, from their million-dollar Chicago home to a country cottage for two at the end of a dirt road with chickens. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The great singers of the big band era are still swinging today. This is Fred Hall. I talk with them.
Forget your troubles. Come on, get happy. We're going to chase all your blues away.
Tony Bennett, hallelujah, come on, one of my guests on Swing Thing, as we talk to the leaders, the solo stars, the arrangers, the composers, and the singers. And feature artists like Sinatra, Starr, Stafford, Stacy, Brown, Beneke, Miller, Martin, and Morgan. Listen each week for Swing Thing.
Come on!
And this week on Swing Thing, Fred Hall interviews Joe Williams, one of the great blues and jazz singers. That's Saturday at midnight, Swing Thing.
This weekend, the Fort Smith Museum of History opens a new exhibit paying tribute to some of the women responsible for breaking boundaries in Arkansas. The Divergent Path, Women in Arkansas History, began as a smaller project by the museum for a separate display on the campus of the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith. But, as Lisa Gramlich, the executive director of the Fort Smith Museum of History, explains, there was too much material to not create something bigger.
We started doing the research, and we just got carried away. There were so many women with so many amazing stories. And that's how it began, as a small thing, and we just didn't want to stop there. So we just continued researching and expanded to include a whole gallery full of women and their accomplishments.
History being the way it has been told in many places, these are stories that some of us don't know, partly because they are of women and their stories weren't included For years, yeah.
Exactly. Many 19th century women, their stories certainly were not told, not in their time, in their era, even early 20th century women. Their stories were not told. And we have just discovered the most amazing accomplishments. We have the first woman to vote in Fort Smith. She voted in a primary before women had the right to vote, just walked in and did it. And fascinating story there. And it just goes on and on. So many stories that women who did something outside what was expected of women in their time.
The story of the woman, the first to vote in Fort Smith, may have been one of the first to vote in the South anywhere, right?
I would say so. It was early 20th century, before women had the right to vote, but it was not known a woman could walk in and vote in a primary. She wouldn't have been able to vote in a regular election. So that's just a very interesting story.
How did you decide which women would be included? You mentioned you started this exhibit for UAFS. Did you just start looking?
Yes, we started. We actually had a group of students from UAFS helping us with research. They needed some volunteer time. And they began searching on a wonderful resource, the Encyclopedia of Arkansas. And the women were just coming and coming. There was a story of a woman who was the mayor of Winslow. Her whole city council were women. This was early 20th century. Very, very unusual. You know, there's a great story right there.
Maude Duncan, right?
Yes, Maude Duncan. There you go.
Also, I think, for a time, was the editor of the Winslow newspaper.
Yes, and I want to say she was the first female printer in Arkansas. So, what a story. That's just an example, and they just go on and on. We have Fort Smith's own Polly Cruz, who was quite a pioneer. She did at the time; the other women weren't doing that, you know. And of course, she is. A lot of people still remember her. So that she's an excellent one. And then we come right up to present day. We have Captain Aston Armstrong, the first female to graduate first Fort Smithian female to graduate from West Point. She graduated in 2008, and she's currently in Afghanistan. So we've got her story to tell.
One woman that's included has a very interesting story, and that's Verna Cook Garvin, who became one of the first, if not the first, women to be the CEO of a construction company.
Yes, she amazingly took over her father's business at the age of 24. Her father was a very successful businessman, construction and brick company in Hot Springs, or Malvern, Arkansas. He died suddenly of a car accident, and here were she, her mother, and sister, who's going to run these operations. Well, fortunately, she had been educated at an elite girls' school in Washington, D.C., but when she came home, she spent a lot of time with her father at the business and learning it directly from him, which was very unusual. Girls didn't do that in those days. And so that when her father passed away in 1934, she was able to jump right in there and run everything, which was completely unheard of. It was scandalous at the time. Women didn't do such a thing, especially such a young woman. But she did it. She did what needed to be done and was very, very good at it.
Another woman that I'm very interested to see what's in your exhibit, because I have known of her but know almost nothing about her, is Mary O'Toole Parker, who, of course, was married to Judge Isaac Parker, a Missouri native. But whenever I've tried, and admittedly it's been light research, all I usually see is, wife of Judge Parker. But she had to have a life beyond that.
She did. She did. And she did something amazing here in Fort Smith. I think this started before the death of her husband, but she continued on after she formed the first library. What is today the Fort Smith Public Library got its start as the Fortnightly Club, and Mary Parker was one of the founders. And as a little interesting fact there, what is today Channel 5 TV station, It was the first Carnegie Library. It is on the site of the Parker home. Judge and Mary Parker lived, their home was on that site. It was demolished in the 1898 cyclone. But after it was demolished, the Carnegie Library was built on the site, which is a really interesting story, and she was very instrumental in that.
You are a woman, and you're an executive director of the Fort Smith Museum of History. As this was coming together, were you thinking about what these women, in perhaps a not a completely connected way, but in a way, meant for your life?
Oh, yes. I really admire these women. Women today would not be able to do what we've done, the accomplishments we are able to achieve today, without this foundation. These women who went outside the boundaries of normal expectations for women. If they hadn't done that, we might not be where we are today, where it is women are much more accepted in the workplace and in all different aspects of life that they weren't included in at one time.
One of the great things about what your museum does, you have school-age children that come through, and you're going to have young women and young men who are 17 and younger coming through and seeing, maybe really registering for the first time, that there was a time for many of these women where it was unusual for them to be a CEO or unusual of them to begin a civic operation. Are you hoping that there will be inspiration here?
I hope so, yes. I hope we can have young girls come in and realize, young girls and boys both, and realize that, oh, it wasn't always like this. Even college-age students today, females, I don't think fully understand that they women didn't always have things equally, that it was so different. I don't think they a lot of young people today realize that. And so hopefully this exhibit will help tell that story and help our young people to realize how far things have come and how much change we've seen since 19th century, early 20th century, on up to 21st century.
Was there something that got included in this that was kind of a lucky find or a, oh, wow, we've got to have that in this exhibit?
Yes, one thing we found we did not know was even in existence, a picture of Mary O'Toole Parker. We did not have one. We did locate one. So we have it's the only picture that we're aware of in existence. So that was a really lucky find.
And, of course, I have to ask about Laura Ziegler, who most people don't know that last name. They just know of Miss Laura. She really existed. She had what was then a legal brothel in the Red Light District.
Yes, and she was a very successful businesswoman. She was very good at what she did. She borrowed the money to get started within 18 months. She borrowed $3,000 in 18 months. She had it paid back. She, after several years in business, she saw it, kind of realized that prostitution was going to be illegal soon. I need to get out now. She sold her business for $47,000. Wonderful profit. What a businesswoman. And she, after that, we do not have a photograph of her. We have very little information. After she left Fort Smith, we don't know what happened to her, where she went.
Lisa Gramlich is the executive director of the Fort Smith Museum of History. The exhibit, The Divergent Path, Women in Arkansas History, opens Saturday at the museum in downtown Fort Smith at 11. For the opening, actors will portray three of the women included in the exhibit. The museum is open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 until 5. Sunday afternoons in the summer from 1 until 5. It is closed on Mondays. The exhibit will be up through October 1st.
As the population of the area grows, so too do the number of those in need, whether they be children, animals, the sick or disabled, and even trees and plants. With growth comes an increase in the number of nonprofit organizations, many of which have fundraising events or calls for volunteers. In an effort to consolidate all of this information, we will provide a monthly roundup here on Ozarks at Large. In a few minutes, an effort to find 20 men in 20 days. But first, July may seem quiet, but here are a few things going on this month.
The second annual Beach Bingo Bash that benefits the Elizabeth Richardson Center will take place Friday, that's tomorrow, at the UARC Bowl on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
And then Saturday, the Ozark Natural Science Center is holding a volunteer work day from 9 a.m. to 3. So they need volunteers to come out. I think they're painting some of the buildings,
right.
Just kind of cleaning up around the site.
And this is part of ONSC kind of coming back from a dormancy. So, And you can learn more at their website, the opportunities. Also Saturday night, after you volunteered at ONSC, you can go to the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks, the Firefly Fling. It's been going on for some time now. this may be the fifth annual. I can't quite remember the number, but it takes place at the BGO. It's very family friendly. There will be music. Tomorrow on the show, we're talking to a fire spinner who's performing there as well.
That's exciting.
It is. I have said no fire spinning in the building, however.
Oh.
Yeah, that's tomorrow on Ozarks.
And then July 19th, a night at the races to benefit the Arkansas Support Network at Fayetteville Town Center. Oh, I thought it might have horses with the night at the races, but...
Well, that's part of the theme.
Right, right.
Yes.
But they can't have horses.
No,
horses at the town center.
They cannot. July 19th and 20th, the annual Stuff the Bus opportunities when you can bring school supplies. Literally stuffing the bus through volunteer efforts through the United Way. It helps families who might not be able to afford school supplies. And so you can do that at area Walmarts on July 19th and 20th.
And then the evening of July 20th, a Dream Big Gala to benefit the Children's Safety Center. That is at the Fayetteville Town Center.
And July 26th, Brett Bielema's sixth annual Swing for the Cure. This must be something he brought with him from Wisconsin.
Sounds
if it's
like
the sixth
it.
Annual.
Yeah.
He's has yet to coach a game.
Right,
here, so,
right.
But Coach Brett Bielema's sixth annual Swing for the Cure benefiting Coleman Ozark. It's at Shadow Valley Country Club in Rogers. And just a note that on August 2nd, which is not this month, there is a Roaring Twenties fundraiser for the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra. That takes place at Scarpino's in downtown Fayetteville. I'll be the MC for that.
All right. Almost 110 years ago, a court clerk in New York City noticed a lot of boys coming through his courtroom. That man was Ernest Coulter, and he started the Big Brothers Association to help keep boys out of trouble. A few years later, the Ladies of Charity in New York followed suit, befriending little girls, and so began the Big Sisters Association. In 1977, the two organizations joined to form one, the Big Brothers Big Sisters of America, a mentoring organization aimed at helping change kids' perspective and giving them the opportunity to reach their potential through one-on-one relationships. Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northwest Arkansas got its start 20 years ago. Brittany Gully is development director for the local organization.
You can be there for them on the weekends or after hours or whenever. So they really kind of got together and just... took about 2 years, obviously, to get it up and going with funding and staff and stuff like that. But we're fortunate that we're 20 years strong.
It is in honor of the 20-year anniversary this month that they have launched the 20 Men in 20 Days campaign in an effort to recruit 20 new Big Brothers. So, adult males volunteer less than females?
Yes, I hate to admit it, but I think us women just tend to want to give back a little more, or don't question as much as the men do. You know, people find that their common question is, how much time is this going to take, or how much money is this going to take? And the females don't really seem to care. They want to just give back any way they can. And so sometimes it takes us a little more convincing towards the guys to come out and be a part of our agency. But once they do, they love it. And a lot of times our bigs find that they get more out of it than our littles do. You know, they get to be a kid again and they just have fun. And
that's pretty much the only requirement, to have fun. You heard Brittany say bigs and littles. That's the lingo here. Bigs can take their littles to go see a movie, play video games, go to the park, play ball, things they normally wouldn't get to do if they didn't have a little in their life. It really is just having fun and hanging out twice a month with an at-risk kid.
So they are from single-parent homes. They're from alternate caregiver homes. A lot of our kids live with grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends of the family. Maybe their parents are incarcerated. 1 in 4 of the children that we served last year had an incarcerated parent. Or, you know, the single parent who's just working a lot of hours and just needs somebody else to kind of be there for their kids.
As the requirement is to spend at least a year with your little, many bigs develop quite the relationship with their brother or sister, often texting or emailing about school, tests, or sports outside of the allotted 4 hours a month. The organization served 202 kids last year and aims to help 250 in 2013 in both Washington and Benton counties. The kids are spread out evenly between the two counties, but Brittany says it's more difficult to get volunteers in Benton County. that they're lucky to have the University of Arkansas in Washington County. It provides a lot of volunteers. And that's where this year's Big Sister of the Year is from. However, she graduated this year with her master's.
They've been together for 4 years, and they're like sisters, real sisters now. And so they plan to keep in touch. The little was in her wedding, and they feel like they're a part of each other's family. And so they both kind of get teary-eyed when they talk about, you know, she's moving, but we know we can still pick up the phone or text or email and stay in contact that way.
A success story of sorts. Though success is hard to measure, the national organization held a study in 1995. It showed that youth served by Big Brothers, Big Sisters are 46% less likely to use illegal drugs, 27% less likely to use alcohol, 52% less likely to skip school, and one-third less likely to hit someone. In addition, they get along better with friends, teachers, and family members.
Their grades are better, that their social skills are better, that their future outlook is better. So I think that is success in itself.
Though they are calling for men, the number of boys they serve does not outweigh the number of girls. But due to the lack of Big Brothers, they often spend more time waiting. For men that are apprehensive and maybe need a nudge from the female in their life, the agency also has a program for couples.
A married couple or a couple who's been together at least 7 years. And then big families would be a married couple that have kids of their own. A lot of times we see like they have teenage kids, and so they want to have 6, 7, 8-year-old little in their life, and they teach their kids at an early age about how to give back to their community and how to get involved. It's kind of a bonus for the littles because then they have more than one big to look up to.
Of course, they will take applications of any kind in the next couple of weeks and any time, but they are calling for men. The 20 Men in 20 Days campaign is on its fourth day, and according to Brittany Gilley, they have received 2 applications. Applicants must pass a background and driver check and attend a 4-hour training session. Also going on right now, Bowling for Kids' Sake, a national fundraiser held at bowling alleys. Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Northwest Arkansas is still taking teams for its Luau at the Lane events July 18th, 23rd, 27th, and August 1st, either at Fast Lanes in Rogers or Ozark Lanes in Fayetteville. For more information or to apply, visit bbbsnwa.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Coming up here and now, if the U.S. embargo against Cuba is lifted, you might think Miami would be the main beneficiary. But on the other side of the state, Tampa has been quietly winning the Cold War on Cuban trade. Also, a long look at an iconic John Singer Sargent painting. Next time on Here and Now, from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, this afternoon, beginning at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
So, and then Jamie will obviously be coming when he's singing. He'll be coming through here. Check.
So you'll get the band and the feel of what's going on.
Very cool.
Last night, musicians and actors involved in an upcoming stage reading of the new script B-Side, Myself, gathered in a recording studio in Fayetteville to rehearse together for the first time and for the last time before Sunday afternoon's script-in-hand performance at George's Majestic Lounge. We've tracked the progress of this work since the first time the actors read the script out loud back in the spring. This is our final installment in what we're calling a start-to-finish series.
There will be more things recording than we can count.
So,
Jamie McGaugh is the author of the play. It's based loosely on events he experienced while playing in a band in New York City. The fictional trappings of the script involve the character he'll play Sunday, Jim, at an audition. Jim's band has been offered a chance to open for a popular rock star when that rock star goes on an Asian tour.
Hey, how you doing?
Super. And you are?
I'm Jim Elliott, the lead singer for The Suits. I think we have an audition tonight. Am I in the right place?
The Suits, here you are. I don't remember scheduling you. Sorry, we've seen a lot of bands lately.
Sure you have.
When this incarnation of the production began last spring, Jamie McGaugh had already spent a few years tweaking and revising his script, and he was confident that it was in the final form needed. Then, since we did our last story on Ozarks at Large about the work, he met with Bob Ford, the artistic director of Theater Squared and a published playwright and author.
And he just brought up some really salient points about the script. And he said, you know, you probably don't want to do it this go-around, but, you know, next version, you know, you should try these things. Well, of course, I leave the building. I'm like, oh, my God, I have to do these right now. So I went home, and I stayed up until about 4 o'clock that morning banging these things out, and I sent the script out the next morning.
And last night was the first time the actors had seen the newly trimmed work. It is leaner, about 8 pages leaner, and as Jamie explained to one actor last night, the updated version treats a character a little bit better.
He's a little smarter.
I think that might just be the intelligence.
He calls Jim on his BS a lot more.
Yeah.
And he kind of forces his hand a little bit.
Jamie is talking to Randall Shreve, who plays the jaded rock star Billy Beard, a tired musician whose time in the spotlight is waning. Randall, well-known and well-liked for his own musical career, is limited to just one song in this production. He's mostly acting, though after years of playing live, he has performed in front of audiences before.
Well, not like this, of course. Not, to me, this isn't performing. This is kind of falling all over myself while people around me perform and make me, well, yeah, like this every night. This is what I do every night. Fall over myself and pretend to perform, and then the guys around me make up for it.
If he seems a bit apprehensive about this new endeavor, Shreve is approaching the experience with a wide open mind.
I like the idea of doing acting. I just don't want anybody to depend too greatly on me, because I know, you know, my limitations and my time being one of them, you know, not having the time to commit to really becoming what is needed for a good, you know, for a lead role. And so with these guys' help and patience and not a lot of pressure, it's been a lot of fun.
His character gets several funny lines and is the sort of charming rogue you don't mind observing. You just wouldn't want to have to be around him too often. The Billy Beard character, at least in the first act, appears to be a self-centered, somewhat dispassionate fellow, even uninterested in music, a trait that's not at all in common with the real-life Randall Shreve.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you see it that way. That's when I read through the script, I felt the same way, and I told Lauren, my fiance, I was just like, I'm the wrong guy. This isn't, and she was like, that's why it's called acting. You don't want to be the one that most resembles you.
There's much music in this play, even though the main character, Jim, is forced to audition without his perpetually tardy bandmates. He does audition with the aid of some recorded music. For those sequences Sunday, there will be a band on stage, musicians who have been learning Jamie's original scores for the script for the past few weeks. They've even all performed in front of a paying audience together as the fictional band The Suits. They opened for another act at the Phoenix on Dixon Street last month. Kate Knox is in the band. She's the fictional Tina, and she says The Suits' first and only gig went very well.
It was so much fun. We got a great response from the crowd, and we got to see what we needed to work on, and it felt really nice to actually feel like a band. So I had a great time. I had a very good time. So it went great, actually. So
since Jamie McGaugh began this process of having his script read by actors and having his songs performed by musicians, he's worked with those two groups on different nights. Last night, for the first time, and the last before the actual stage reading, they ran through the script all together, all under one roof. Justin Schur is directing the reading, though he says responsibilities for a staged reading are different than if it were a full production. He says the work leading up to Sunday's script in hand has been kind of like a musical jam session.
I'm more of a facilitator than an actual director, you know, and which is kind of cool that we're all just, we're in this together, and it's very collaborative, and there isn't one unifying vision except to present Jamie's script in the best light so people can hear what he's done.
The script-in-hand reading of B-Side Myself, a play with rock music, will be staged Sunday afternoon at 2 at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Tickets are available at georgesmajesticlounge.com. More information about the script-in-hand reading can be discovered at the B-Side Myself Facebook page.
This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
A couple of music notes that I need to pass along.
Okay.
Some things that have been recently announced. The band Spyrogyra, which has been around for a long time, they have been announced as the headline act for the 2013 Jazz Eureka Festival this September. The actual dates are September 13th and 14th for the festival. Spyrogyra will be the headliners. They were formed around 74 or 75. They've played in Northwest Arkansas before. You shake your head. I think they're kind of what people would call jazz fusion. Have you heard that term?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm familiar with that.
Okay, that's an older term
but
as 40, well.
A 40-year-old band, that's
yeah, and they've
good.
Been together and they've been selling records. Mm-hmm. So they'll be in Eureka Springs in September. Two weeks from tomorrow, Friday, July 26th at the Fayetteville Underground, Jack Williams, who is a legend, will be coming. Mike Shirky bringing him in. And so
this is kind of a good folk.
Yes.
A good folk
yes,
production.
Yes, it is a good folk production. It will be taking place at the Fayetteville Underground, and that's at the corner of Block and Mountain Street on the Fayetteville Square. That's July 26th. Tickets for that begin at $15, the concert on July 26th at 8 p.m.
And then earlier this week, or was it last week, that you and Antoinette had a music group?
We had the Cole Reeves Band in the Furman Garden Performance Studio. They actually came in last week.
Okay.
They're playing tomorrow night at the Benton County Fairgrounds, opening for David Allan Coe. And they came in. It was a fun visit. Three guys whose ages total up a little bit more than mine.
I was going to say, combined. They're pretty young, aren't they?
Yes, but very enthusiastic and great musicians, great fun. And we're going to have the full visit with them in a couple of songs tomorrow. But here's one of the songs that they performed inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
We'll start off with She's Everything. This is a song that I wrote about a girl that I had never met when I wrote this song. I saw this girl. She popped up on my Facebook. And sure enough, guys, this is a crazy story. She'll probably hear this on the radio and be like, wow, I never knew this. I work with her now, and I never met her at the time.
What's her name?
Matt, to go on said. I really did. I worked with this girl. Her name is Deanna. And I work with this girl now, but I had never met her at the time, and it was crazy. My cousin owned a business. He hired me. I go into work there, and sure enough, she's sitting there working. And I was like, wow. I didn't say this, but in my head, I was like, I wrote a song about you 2 years ago. And I wrote this song when I was 15 or 16, so it's been a couple years ago. And it's called She's Everything. We ready?
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Pretty face, beautiful eyes. Oh, I was mesmerized when she walked in. She said hello and she said right down. Oh, Lord, she came around just when I needed her. I looked at her and then she looked at me. I could feel the fire when our eyes meet. She's in school and I'm out on a job, playing in bars and honky-tonks all around the world. When I sing my song, she just smiles. Oh, I'd walk a country mile just to talk to her. She'll never know how much she means. Cause in my eyes, she she's the love of my life, she's everything I ever wanted. My breath when I'm breathing, my feet when I'm running. Without her, I can't survive. I love her to death, and she knows that's true. Oh, I try to be so cool when she's around. I look in her eyes, and she'll look in mine. Oh, I think I really fell in love. She's in school and I'm out on a job, playing in bars and honky-tonks all around the world. When I sing my song, she just smiles. Oh, I'd walk a country mile just to talk to her. She'll never know. We'll be right back.
everything. Oh, in my eyes, she's everything.
That was Cole and Matt Reeves and Nate Wong inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Together, they are the Cole Reeves Band, and they will open for David Allan Coe at 6 tomorrow night at the Benton County Fairgrounds. Tickets and more information available at hardluckentertainment.com. You can listen to a conversation with the band as well as another performance on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF is supported by Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971, offering local organic produce and all-natural groceries, bulk foods, health and wellness products, and a full-service deli. Ozark Natural Foods is located in the Evelyn Hill Shopping Center or on the web at ozarknaturalfoods.com. Support also comes from Crepes Paulette, serving authentic French crepes in an outdoor setting located in downtown Bentonville. Also available are gluten-free savory crepes ready for homemade filling, now available at Ozark Natural Foods in Fayetteville. Hours, menus, and videos can be found online at crepespaulette.com.
Russian composer Anatoly Liadov lived from 1855 to 1914 and studied with the illustrious Rimsky-Korsakov. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Note, which airs the best in classical music Monday through Friday from 11 to noon right here on KUAF Public Radio. Join me Friday for Liadov's Three Symphonic Sketches. That's coming up 11 to noon Friday right here on KUAF Public Radio.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
And yesterday, you were in Springdale.
I was in Springdale.
Tyson headquarters and working on a story that we'll hear early next week.
Yes. They're calling it Springdale's Hidden Treasure. It's an art collection, Tyson's corporate art collection.
Many pieces, many household artists' names.
Right. I mean, they're Don Harrington, Dombeck, George Dombeck.
Yes.
No, yeah. A lot of local artists,
but
also
others.
National
yeah.
artists as well. Quite impressive. And I can't imagine working. You know, you see the people in their tan outfits walking mm-hmm. up and down the hallway. And here are all these works of art. You know, they're not drab hallways.
Right. I know that I've gone there for press conferences and I'm walking through and I'll, you know, kind of squint and see a very famous signature and go, really?
Yeah.
It's an original. It's not mm-hmm. a print. So you'll have that on Tuesday because there is also a discussion about this collection Wednesday at noon at the Shiloh Museum
right,
of Ozark History.
The consultant curator will be giving that with a slideshow.
All right. So that'll be on Tuesday, we think.
Yes.
Tuesday's
that's
edition.
That's the plan.
Yes, that is the plan. That's what we have here. We yeah. have plans.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Fort Smith, and Hinesville.
Hinesville, which is fewer than 100 people, according to the population size.
Yes.
And the site where they're filming the movie...
Valley Inn.
Valley Inn. I think today or tomorrow, they're kind of trying to wrap up.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Valley Inn being the little cafe that used
yes.
to be there.
Yeah.
Up until a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I
miss it.
So we'll look forward to that as they finish that. Antoinette Grajeda will be with me tomorrow. We'll have more from the Cole Reeves Band and plenty of other stuff on tomorrow's brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.
And then I'll be back for Weekend Ozarks at Large on Sunday morning at 9.
Okay. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening.
Have a good Thursday.
We've got just a couple of seconds here. Today is 7/11/13.
Okay.
7/11, very lucky, right? 13, very
not
unlucky.
Not so lucky.
So, pessimist, optimist, where do you fall on this?
Optimist.
Me too. I'll take the 7/11 over the 13.
For sure.
All right. Date is half full. All right. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
They call you Lady Luck, but they're...